We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
All right, welcome back here in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you as we are live in Surprise, Arizona. Our coverage brought to you by Velocity Academy. You can book your times in one of their three different pitching tunnels right now by going to velocityacademy.org or call them 816-425-5870. All the latest technologies available to you, Rapsodo, Hittrax, Garmin Impact Technologies. I got the Driveline Pitching and Hitting. Again, make your reservations right now or get more information by going to velocityacademy.org. We're also brought to you by our friends at Sprint, making it possible for us to work on the road no matter where we are. That is our friends at Sprint. Look them up online at sprint.com for the best in wireless technologies. Let's talk some more baseball. Our thanks to Ryan O'Hearn joining us in the last segment. Didn't know that was going to happen, but always great to have one of the guys sit down with us. I'm going to talk to a guy who analyzes these guys. Michael Augustine, the going deep manager at pitcherlist.com, is with us. He's written a great piece on Brad Keller. He's on our Sprint guest line right now. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. I love reading this about Brad Keller. That, in fact, the title of the piece, if people want to search it, Going Deep, Brad Keller Will Be Something. Which is one of the things that we're certainly rooting for here in Kansas City. The Royals need him to be something, and it's one of the things we've talked about. You know, he's a guy that pitches really well but doesn't necessarily have huge strikeout numbers, and so we're saying, okay, did he just kind of catch everybody sleeping, or is he going to be the real deal? So I love seeing a breakdown that says he's going to be the real deal. Tell me, in general terms, which you cover very in very specific terms in the article, but why you think Brad Keller is going to be something.
Well, first and foremost, the foundation of what I wrote about here was it was all based upon the release distance between all of the Major League Baseball pitchers. Now, generally speaking, most pitchers are going to have pretty close release points. You're all going to have exceptions where pitchers throw out of different arm slots. But I went and looked at the top 10 or so, and Keller was on that list. I believe he came in at number 8. And I started looking at the other aspects of tunneling, and I started to see that he was above average in just about everything except flight time differential, which basically measures the difference in speed between back-to-back pitches. Tunneling is obvious; it's not something that is required of a pitcher, but anybody that can do it, you've got a leg above everybody else. It's like a golfer who can drive the ball further than everybody else. May not have the greatest short game, but he's already ahead of everybody else because he can move the ball a lot further than everyone else can. Same with velocity. High velocity guys, they've already got an advantage with throwing harder. They just need to build off everything else that they have. But with Keller, he's got, and he even mentioned when you interviewed him earlier about how he was working on his release point. And the tighter that can stay and the better that he can keep those pitches in tunnels, the more deceptive he's going to be. And I think that's the key and why I think he can be great is because he can produce a lot of deception in his pitches.
I'd go a little bit deeper on what the tunnel is and why that part of it is such an important piece to pitchers and being deceptive.
Right. So the tunnel, the whole idea of tunneling is basically a back-to-back pitch traveling along the same trajectory, the same general trajectory. I like to say that you don't want the two pitches greater than maybe a baseball distance between the two of them. When they've been thrown back to back, as far as like the separation between the two pitches or the two balls, that you want to keep those pitches as close together as possible before they reach what is called the decision-making point. And that's about 175 milliseconds after the ball has been released. And that sounds like not very much time, and it really isn't. I mean, we're talking almost as quick as a blink of an eye. And at that point, that's when generally hitters have to decide whether or not they're going to swing at a pitch. Now, if you're throwing back-to-back pitches and they're going the same exact spot or it appears to go to the same exact spot, the hitter's got to guess. And it's not going to be easy to identify what exactly it is that they're getting. Now, if once a pitch reaches that point and starts to do its own thing, that's where the deception comes in because you may think that, you know, you just got a fastball right down the middle, you see the next pitch coming right through that same area. I mean, with the amount of time you had to make a decision, your mind is already going to be thinking this is probably another fastball based on the way it's moving, being able to see the spin of the ball aside. And, you know, you're going to swing right over it, or depending on where he puts that pitch, you're going to, chances are you'll miss it, or you're going to be making bad contact.
There are great gifts of basically multiple pitches laid over. One of the first ones has, I think it's three pitches, and basically it looks like it's just one video of Keller throwing one pitch. And, you know, to go what Michael's talking about is illustrated with a bunch of different gifts. Then all of a sudden a second baseball or even a second and a third baseball appear, and you see them go to the different places that they're going and how late that part is. And that's right. Where it is. His breaks off so late, it's so hard to determine what it is. And with the video, it's freaky. I mean, I remember when I saw this, I don't know, maybe it was Max Scherzer, I think, has one that's just insane, which you'd expect, right, as good as he's been.
Right.
But it's just freaky to watch it, how perfectly the same he is in delivering the pitches and then where the ball is coming and how it just breaks off. So how good is Keller, right? How good is that aspect of it compared to other guys? Are you looking at him saying, okay, he's pretty good, right? He's not Max Scherzer right now. We know that. But he's pretty good, but this projects out to guys that are this good at this age or this few big league innings go on to blow up and be superstars? Or are you looking at him right now and saying, wow, he's so good that really they were lucky to get the hits off him they got last year, and just he should just be even better just because of the ability he's got right now at this moment?
Right, and I think it's just from my perspective, it's pure speculation without looking really, really close at him. He generates a lot of those ground balls because perhaps he is doing things like that, like his tunneling ability, and it's throwing hitters off enough to where they're not getting the kind of contact that that they need to make. And as I mentioned before, tunneling is not an absolute necessary skill. It's just a big tool that a pitcher can have in his arsenal. And the fact that Keller has that and he's done so good at it thus far, and of course, you know, he's young, he's 23, things change, you know, his numbers could be a bit different, his arsenal could change, and that's the key thing too, is he's got the kind of pitches that work well off of each other, that fastball, the two-seamer, and the slider. And his fastball slider, if you go back and look at those gifts, are just it's incredible to look at the break that it gets and when it gets that break. And, you know, like I said, if a hitter's coming up there and he's seeing another fastball, he's just going to look completely stupid. And that's where the whole baseball perspective is like, you know, what was he swinging at? Why did he swing that badly at that pitch? Well, now you see why, because he's thinking he's getting one pitch and he's actually getting another. And that's huge for any pitcher to be able to do, because a lot of guys can just throw the ball. They have great movement. They know how to work with their spin access. And it's just another tool that's going to make him even better so long as he's able to keep everything tight like he is now. I heard him mention that he doesn't pay attention to stats and stuff like that. And maybe that's a good thing for him. You know, you don't want the whole paralysis by overanalysis. Whatever he's doing now, he's doing it right, and he can only get better from there.
We're talking right now to Michael Augustine, the Going Deep manager at PitcherList.com. A great, great breakdown on Brad Keller. A lot of great numbers if you're into the numbers, breaking it down, some charts, some graphs, but some incredible gifts showing just exactly what has made Brad Keller so effective. You get on down in the article and you start talking about him hitting the edges of the strike zone, and his numbers are similar to Zach Greinke, right? We got a background with Zach here and saw his career really take off, saw him struggle as well early in his career. Part of that because of how fast they jammed him up to the big leagues, I believe, but and the pressure to save a franchise that had nothing else going on for it at the time. But how much can you say, okay, Keller's, I'm not going to say he's going to be Zach Greinke because Zach's been one of the best pitchers, right, top 10 pitcher at least for the last decade or so, but how much can you look at it and say, all right, that's at least what the ceiling should be on Brad Keller?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's looking at it realistically. I mean, he could go even higher. It just it really all depends. But he's hitting the corner. He hit the corners last year or the edges about 44% of his pitches, and the league average is like 39. So I mean, 5% doesn't really sound like a lot, but it's a big difference compared to the rest of the league. And he's generating strikes on well over half of those, whether it's through swing and miss, called strike, foul ball. And when he hits those edges, just 6% of all those pitches have ended up as hits. So that's major for him, and I think if that's something that he can continue to do, I think that's going to be really helpful for him going forward. And, yeah, I mean, it would be great to see him reach Greinke-like numbers and possibly even to exceed him. But, yeah, I would agree with that assessment. I think that's pretty fair to say that could be his ceiling at this point in time.
And listen, the numbers you've got on Greinke are multiple years. We're talking about a very small sample size on Brad Keller. So, you know, he's got to go back and repeat it and do it again. So that's a big part of it. How much does the catcher, when you're out on the edges, you talk about getting the strikes. You know, Salvador Perez is not known as a great pitch framer. The Royals love him. The Royals say he's tremendous back there. They say he's great at everything he does, right? But he's their guy. How much can the catcher influence these borderline pitches and help out with it? How much does Salvi deserve some credit on how Keller was pitching, beyond just the obvious that he's part of the game calling part of the equation?
Right, and framing is something we're just starting to understand. It's come into the baseball lingo within the last couple years here, and a catcher can have a lot of influence over what actually happens when a pitcher throws a pitch. Now, you know, a guy moving his glove after he catches it, you know, over like even a half an inch can be the difference between walking a guy and striking a guy out when you're thinking in terms of like a full count or something like that. But that's all dependent on the umpire. A lot of umpires don't really, I guess, buy into the framing idea, meaning that they can tell, you know, where the pitch actually ends, and the catcher just isn't good enough moving it in order to influence the umpire's decision. So ultimately, you're at the mercy of the umpire and the catcher's ability to fool the umpire. And as far as what I could tell for Perez, he's actually near the bottom of the league in terms of framing statistics, such as getting called strikes. His ability to get borderline pitches called strike is much worse than the rest of the league, as well as the runs that have been saved by him being able to frame. And I'm not going to get into all that because these are very complex stats and the way that they put them all together and everything. But I also want to mention that this is not in any way, shape, or form to put down Perez. He's a great catcher. He does a lot of things really good. He's a great hitter. But this particular aspect of framing does help a pitcher, or can help a pitcher like Keller out tremendously, especially since he can work the zone, the edges so well. He doesn't do it great, but the fact that Keller was able to be as successful as he was hitting the edges, knowing that Perez isn't one of the better catching framers in the league, that bodes very well for him, especially if Perez can get better at that.
All right, what about the strikeout part of the equation? Zach Greinke can put up some strikeouts, right? He's not Randy Johnson or anything, but he gets it. Is that something that as he refines and gets more experience that he's got the kind of stuff? You know, I brought this up with Ned, and Ned likes to joust with us guys in the media, right? And he's like, what do I care about a strikeout? You know, nobody cares if a hitter strikes out. What do I care if a pitcher gets a strikeout or an out? And the obvious is if there's a guy on third base and you need to go get it, can you reach back and go get it? Does what he's doing right now give you the idea that he's going to develop, not to a 300 strikeout guy, but that the strikeout's going to become more of a weapon for him?
Yeah, I think the big thing that I see right now is obviously, you know, that he had started out in the bullpen, and he about midway through the season he came up as a starter, and right now he essentially has three pitches, and they're all pretty good pitches. I'd like to see a fourth pitch develop. I don't know what his trust in his changeup is. I'd like to see that added in more, and I think the more, if he can add in at least one more pitch and can mix them up more, the strikeouts are going to go up. I mean, right now he does a pretty good job. He throws his four-seam a little bit less than 50% of the time, and he mixes a sinker and slider in about 25% of the time. So he keeps it pretty varied, but I think the fact that he's not getting those strikeouts and he is pitching to contact, I guess is what you would say, I think adding another pitch and being able to mix and sequence his pitches better with that additional pitch could see his strikeouts go up. And again, if he continues to pound the edges of the strike zone and he can get some calls and he can be as good as he was last year, I mean, that strikeout number is going to go up. and he can still be a ground ball pitcher while striking out hitters as well. I that was something that I came across, that you're not going to be a high strikeout guy if you continue to generate a lot of ground balls, but, you know, an out is an out. And we all love to see the strikeout, but the ground out, and depending on the situation, can be just as good.
I love this sentence. It's towards the end, and you covered part of it right there, but I'll let you kind of translate it. It's great writing on your part. Forget about the conclusions you're getting to. I predict that if Keller can figure out his ideal sequences and remain liquid, along with creating the proper pitch ecosystem, and even start elevating his fastball more, he can be a force this season. That is – and if you read the whole article – right, it all makes sense. But explain that sentence, and what you're saying needs to happen, which, again, you covered a little bit of it right there. But what needs to happen for him this year to be, you know, super effective?
Right. If he can mix his pitches up well, as I mentioned, you know, keep the hitters off balance, disrupt their timing. And that's kind of what I'm getting at with liquidity with a pitcher on the mound. And this is something that was coined by Perry Husband, who is, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, the creator of a concept called effective velocity, which is a whole other topic altogether. Really smart guy. And you may or may not have heard, if you watch MLB Now, Carlos Pena has done a couple things about liquid analytics. And basically the idea is just being able to adjust on the fly. And I'm not going to pretend to understand what pitchers or how pitchers work when they're on the mound, what catchers want them to do, the pitching coach, what their plan for the pitcher is. Just, you know, if you go up there with a certain game plan, like if I get two strikes, I'm going to hammer the fastball, you know, being able to come at the hitter with something different that they may not expect to be seeing. And I don't recall the year it was, but Johan Santana was absolutely dominant one year because the hitters literally had no idea what they were going to see on two strikes. And he would just dominate them. And that's kind of what I mean by being liquid. You know, you may, you know, okay, this guy, Keller, we know Keller's going to throw his fastball if he gets ahead in the count. So be ready for that fastball. Well, you know, realizing the situation that he's in, maybe, you know, okay, I'm going to get away from the four-seam fastball. Maybe I'm going to drop in my changeup, which I hardly ever throw, or throw him off with a slider and change their mentality and the way that they're going to look at the at-bat. As far as the pitch ecosystem, is just knowing where to place the pitches given the pitch prior. You know, I had said elevate the fastball. I like to see pitchers elevate their fastball a little bit more. The numbers seem to be a bit better up in the zone with four-seam fastballs, and the whiff rate is a lot higher as well. Of course, there's always caveats to that. If you got a guy who's going to run into one, I mean, he's going to drive a ball, a fastball pretty far if he comes into contact with it. But the whole idea being, you know, let's give him the four-seam fastball, and then let's build, you know, a slider off that. Okay, you've created a velocity spread of maybe like 10 miles an hour, so the hitter's timing is going to be off, and that's where the pitch tunnel comes in to all that. And it's hard for me to explain and elaborate. I mean, I could go on and on forever, but hopefully that makes a little bit more sense. And yeah, I mean, that's just kind of the general idea I was trying to get here with saying that just as long as he's able to, you know where to throw his pitches and at what time and the most beneficial location given the count, runners on bases, outs, et cetera.
Is up in the zone more effective because that call used to never be gotten, and now the umpires have been, you know, are being graded based upon the actual strike zone, and the video and the computer is able to tell, okay, you're not calling this strike up here. You know, it's supposed to be from the letters down. Is that pitch more effective because pitchers never got that call, so they don't throw it? So hitters have spent, basically the strike zone's been at the belt, and now when you go upstairs, nobody's seen it. And that, for right now, that's new. And if we start seeing that all the time, the guys will get better at it. The hitters will adjust back and get better at it.
Right. That does have something to do with it. I mean, we're in a trend now where fastballs are being pounded low in the zone, so guys are going up there waiting to hit a fastball in those general locations. You know, you get a fastball up, especially if you're developing a launch angle swing. If you're cutting a little bit under your swing, there's a good chance that if you can get that fastball up in the zone, the hitter's going to swing right underneath it. And again, as I said, I don't want to pretend to think that I understand, you know, what goes on inside a clubhouse and what decisions are being made for hitters and pitchers. But just generally speaking, I think those elevated fastballs work because, like you said, it's not something that's being done very often. And I also believe, too, that a lot of guys with those launch angle swings, if they're going to get underneath that pitch. But there's also, as I said before, a very high probability that when they do run into one, you're going to cause a lot of damage. But that's kind of fewer and further between than the whiff rate with the pitches being high in the zone. I think that, I mean, you look at the Milwaukee Brewers and what their pitching coach did for them the last couple years. They throwing a lot of high fastballs, and that bullpen, one of the big reasons why they've done so well is because they kept their fastballs up in the zone.
That's interesting. Real quick, we're talking to Michael Augustine from PitcherList.com. Have you had a chance to grind through any of the Royal stuff? Have you done any work on Jacob Junis? Do you have an opinion on him?
I have not. I would like to look into some of those guys a little bit more because I am kind of intrigued by some of the guys that the Royals have on staff and some of the prospects coming up through their farm system. Generally with what I do on the website is just I just kind of go across the board to everybody. It's just if something sticks out or something jumps out at me, like the whole Keller situation, you know, I'll just run with it. But I haven't really had an opportunity to look too deeply into the Royals roster yet.
Okay. We're talking to Michael Augustine, as I said, here in the program. Final four time for you, Michael. Four quickies. Just tell me the first thing that pops into your mind. First of all, what's the best pitch in baseball? I'm thinking it might be the high fastball after listening to you, but what do you think the best pitch in baseball is?
Probably the high fastball.
Okay. I'll take that one. Who's your favorite pitcher to watch?
Favorite pitcher to watch right now is probably Blake Snell.
Oh, really? That's
yep.
Awesome. I'm a fan, just fantasy baseball stuff. I've had Blake Snell for a number of years, so I always enjoy him. You got an idea, just your gut. I'm not asking you if you've done any breakdown on this, but your gut. How many wins are you expecting from the Royals this year?
Well, it's going to be a little rough this year in that division. I guess just off the top of my head, I'm going to put them anywhere between 70 and 80 wins this year. Okay. Maybe high end, I think they could break 500, but I think I don't think this year is really going to be the year where they make a push, but I could always be wrong.
Yeah. Hey, listen,
hopefully for the fan's sake, I am.
Yeah. Well, after 58 wins last year, even on the low end at 70, it's a 12-game improvement. So
right,
I mean, that's definitely headed in the right direction. All right. And finally, tell me what are you in favor or against? You know, some kind of rules on the shift.
I'm definitely. I love the shift. I don't see why there should be any reason to remove it from the game. It's a defensive strategy. You know, if it's you're looking at it from an offensive perspective, if you're concerned about being a detriment to scoring runs and whatnot, I understand that. But me personally, any type of strategy that can be added, I'm all for it. Innovation is a great thing.
All right, Michael, listen, I love the piece. It's great stuff. I invite everybody to go to PitcherList.com. You can Google Michael Augustine. He is the Going Deep Manager at PitcherList.com. And the gifts are fantastic. I love that stuff, and it'll really illustrate why Brad Keller has been effective, and you'll see how hard it is to hit against Brad Keller when you check it out. So, Michael, thanks so much for the time. We really appreciate it. Nice work on the piece, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again soon.
Awesome. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
You bet. Michael Augustine, PitcherList.com. He is the Going Deep Manager, and he does go deep into the analysis on this. But if you're a baseball fan, if you're a Royals fan, I think you'll really enjoy this piece. So check it out. Great, great stuff there from Michael Augustine. We'll take a break, come back. We're in Surprise, Arizona. Chilly Surprise, Arizona. Spring training home of the Kansas City Royals. Our coverage brought to you by Velocity Academy and Sprint.